Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Turnbuckle Turmoil fan, Sign Guy here with you on another Sunday afternoon. Some show notes if you're looking for some wrestling today. NWA Circle City in Indianapolis, Indiana today. KDW down in Jeffersonville, Indiana. You have PNPW in Astoria, Oregon. And you also have, as usual, NWA Blue Collar Wrestling, which returns after a one-week hiatus at the North Portland Eagles. Want to thank the fine people at Project 42 Wrestling last night. Had a great debut. Saw a lot of people I haven't seen in a long time at that show, so great time there. QT, you missed out on Project 42. A lot of wrestling all over the Pacific Northwest. The last couple of days, huge week for the Pacific Northwest independent scene.
Was Project 42 kind of like Area 51? That's what I want to know about. And so does Devin Bellinger.
He asked some weird questions at South Park, Bellinger, but no, it was not like Project 42. I saw no unidentified space aliens.
I see. Now, can you tell us when this Project 42 got underway? People want to know when they missed this epic matches.
You had the first show in January. Then last night, they returned to El Corazon in downtown Seattle.
Now, where was El Corazon? Was that on Seneca Street?
Eastlake.
Oh, okay, Eastlake, far away from the core of the city, yes.
It's kind of near the downtown area, but just on the outer rim of it.
Oh, okay. All right. Can you tell us some of the participants that were there?
Sure. You had the American Guns against Christopher Isaac and Dave Turner. Main event was Big Jack Cunningham versus Darby. In a Seattle street fight, Kellen Wraith wrestled Kate Carney. You had Damon James wrestling Caden Matthews. A new tag team called the Flock, Shepherds of the Flock, rather. They wrestled C.J. Edwards and his partner. Homeboy Quiz was there, and Cedric the Hitman.
Now, Shepherds of the Flock, did they bear any resemblance to a flock of seagulls back in the mid-80s? Was Damon James drinking a lemonade rock star like he used to do in the Tulalip ballroom?
No.
I see. Was Aaron Bolo, did he grace himself somehow with his presence even though he didn't wrestle?
That is confirmed. Yes, Aaron Bolo was in the house watching the show.
Now, did he get together with you before, during, or after this event and talk to you about recent developments at the Weather Club and the Weather Club decision to show wrestling videos and compare them to weather events throughout the United States?
It was before the show, and he mentioned nothing on a meteorological scale to me.
Now, you see, I'm pretty downcast at this news, yes. Aaron Bolo, he's going to take his Weather Club duties a little bit more seriously, just like Jeff Johnson, yes.
Now, the only thing he takes seriously, from what I can ascertain, is the advances of one South Park Bellinger Bragg Williams Mitchell.
Oh, okay. Okay, very good, very good. All right.
I think he's in the weather club for dubious reasons, just from the scuttlebutt I've heard around water coolers.
You mean Aaron Bolo?
No, Jeff Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Aaron Bolo, I believe, is there to enhance his meteorological understanding of weather patterns.
Well, yes, he might get a degree in that, yes. He himself reminds me of kind of like a weather phenomenon, Thor's hammer. Thor's hammer had the ability to elicit lightning. Yes, lightning strikes, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're right, and it was also hard to pick up unless you were Thor.
Yes, that's true, yes. Do you think in my advanced training for my final professional wrestling match that I would be able to lift Aaron Bolo up to my chest? In preparation for a sidewalk slam.
Nope. Wouldn't get anywhere near your chest. Perhaps your knees.
Oh, come on, my knees? Oh, okay, well, that's...
That's not even a guarantee. That's on your best day.
Oh, boy, okay. Well, I have been putting in the laps in preparation, yes. I think Aaron Bolo would be pretty surprised if I tried to, well, not pick him up, but the amount of the vertical lift that I'm able to get right now, yes. I've learned to bend my knees, son guy. That's what I'm getting at. Advanced lifting techniques, if you will.
So are you planning to enter, perhaps, the Mr. Olympia competition?
Well, I don't know about Mr. Olympia. Mr. Universe, maybe. Yes. Mr. Universe. Olympia
right.
For lightweight. Yes. Now, Sango, did you have a chance to look? Now, we're supposed to have Steve the Brawler Lawler on, and hopefully we will have him on in a couple minutes. But did you have a
I believe
to
he is on
at...
now. Let's.
Oh, okay.
Let's see here. Do we have Mr. Lawler with us?
How you doing this afternoon?
Doing very well. Thank you for being on the program today. And
well, thank you all for the invitation.
Our pleasure to have you. Now, our first question for you, since it is your first time on our show, what led to you getting into the professional wrestling business?
When I was 13 years old, it was a dream of mine, and I told everybody whenever I was 13 that I was going to be a professional wrestler and just never gave up, and never lost sight.
Now, being 13 years old, when you decided to get into wrestling, did you have any type of background going into professional wrestling, like an amateur background or any other kind
no,
of
I didn't
athletic?
I didn't have an amateur in wrestling. I'm very proficient in jiu-jitsu, highly proficient, and was proficient up until about the last 10 years, and which is a very well-kept secret. So I just, me and my brother, Terry Lowell, we would always watch wrestling on Saturdays, and we would mimic those guys. And then in 1983, when I broke into the wrestling business, I actually got to wrestle some of my heroes and work with them, learn from them. You know, between Randy Rose and Dick Slater and Wrestling 2 and Jerry Black, well, those guys helped polish me off. But a guy named Glenn and a guy named Ricky Lawless were the ones who took me under their wing and traveled with them, and they started teaching me as they got me as far as they could get me, and then the veterans took me on the rest of the way home and polished me up and taught me what I needed to know and taught me the psychology of it, and then taught me that it's okay to be a tough guy. And back in those days, you pretty much had to be a tough guy. Nothing was given to you. You didn't have to be 6'9" and foot vitamins and look like a Greek god. You just had to be a good entertainer and a heck of a wrestler, whether it be scientific, whether it be tactical, or straight out brawling. And which growing up as a kid, I was always fighting all the time. And then about the third time in front of a judge, they told me that I needed to find something to release my anxiety, if you will, in the right direction. And then here comes professional wrestling. And so and then Bill Newman was a road agent for Great South Professional Wrestling. And I met him, and then the rest of it's 31 years later of history. So it was just a true deal of just being able to say, look, you know, if you have a dream, go after it. Don't let nobody tell you any different. And don't let nobody tell you you can't do something. Because if you really want it bad enough, you can go after and get it. And I did it. And, you know, through the years of wrestling with Dusty Rhodes and Wrestling 2 and Big Slater and the Freebirds, which congratulations for the Hall of Fame for them. Randy Rose, Mike Boyette, just a lot of the guys from way back when. You know, Greg Peterson, he was a big draw in Mobile in the Gulf Coast area. Bill Dromo, just all these guys I've had the opportunity to work beside or work, you know, work against in this great, wonderful profession of ours that is slowly drifting away because the guys of today don't have to pay their dues like we did back then.
You mentioned watching wrestling with your brother. Of course, the two of you formed a well-known tag team, and you've wrestled tag teams pretty often in your career. You've also wrestled singly for large portions of your career. Do you find that you have a preference of one over the other?
I enjoy tag teams. It's a comfort of knowing that, you know, you've got a brother there with you. And, you know, Dino Manelli and I, we were Thunder and Lightning. And then you had the Nightmare, Ted Allen and John Michaels and Grizzly Boone, and we were a Bad Company. And Rick Knopf, he and I tag teamed some. We first broke into business down in Georgia, when it was Georgia All-Stars, taping out about Austin, and then we would wrestle, you know, through the panhandle and stuff. So tag team has always been fun. I mean, it's, you get to have a good time, and you, it's the dynamics and the mechanics of being a tag team, because it's, you know, if you're a one-man show, have at it. But when you're there, because you got to keep in mind that people pay for the whole seat, but you want to keep them on the first 6 inches. And I found that through my career that tag teaming was a lot easier to give them their money's worth. And that was, to me, and it still is to this day, which, you know, I pretty much have done just due to medical reasons. You know, it's best that I don't get back in the ring anymore. But I can say this, when I went home at night, I knew in my heart that I gave them what they paid for, and they used the first 6 inches of the chair. And that was always a goal of mine. And every tag team partner I had, that was our concept, is we're going to keep them on the edge. And these guys today, some are worth their salt and some aren't worth their salt. But tag team has always been fun.
Now, you had a fairly unique situation where you were regular tag team partners with your brother. I know that you've also had other various tag team partners throughout your career. Did you find it different tagging with your brother than when you were tagging with someone else, or was he on the same level as some of the other partners?
In some instances, he was above the level. Not because he was my brother, but it was the respect. And if somebody tag team with me, it had to be out of respect. I had to respect them, and they had to respect me. But tagging with my brother was, it was also that bond of, okay, this is my little brother. And it's something that a lot of guys in this business wish they could do and will never, ever be able to do, is have their true bloodline brother reach out and tag that hand in the middle of the heat of everything. And it's a feeling that you can't describe. Only those who have done it can live it and understand it.
I know in your career you've had some injury to overcome. I'm sure you've picked up quite a few, as everyone that gets in the ring for any amount of time does. What's been some of the bigger injuries that you had to overcome in your career?
Well, let's see, I blew my right shoulder out wrestling a guy who didn't complete a backdrop. I broke my right ankle wrestling Thunderbolt Patterson. 12 weeks later, broke my left ankle wrestling Thunderbolt Patterson. Mm-hmm. Broke my back on a trip in Puerto Rico between the shoulder blades probably mid-career. Of course, you know, the normal broken my fingers, my hand. I've had 21 staples put in my head because I was hitting the head with a 2x4. But, you know, most of that, I'm still, you know, 51, still in pretty decent shape.
One of the things that has been kind of a big topic in professional wrestling in the last few years is concussions, because medical science is learning a lot more about concussions and the long-term effects. The big leagues have concussion protocols that they follow now. There's nothing really on the independent level to protect the wrestlers from concussion. Do you think that there's something that should be done or could be done about concussions on the independent level, or do you think that it's just something that everyone that gets in there is going to have to live with?
I think that as long as you got promoters who are less than human, who are always looking to make the dollar off the guys who are putting their body on the line, it'll never change. I think that promotion should have a doctor there to examine if something goes wrong, because it's going to go wrong. It's going to happen. I deal with it myself. It's the mood swings and things that you go through. And it's because I lined the pockets of promoters over the years, which back then we didn't really focus in on it. And now it's a lot of the science today has answered a lot of questions of why some of the guys are doing what they're doing. I firmly believe that. But until you get promoters up to who need to be held accountable, it'll never change. It's to them, it's a circus. We're the dancing bears, and the bears are always plentiful. But the problem of it is the quality of the bear and what you're getting these days. And that's 90% of what's wrong with indie promotions now. You got a lot of great talent out there who are putting their bodies on the line for minimal dollars, but that promoter is breaking it in. And that's a lot of issues, but to address the question is that I firmly in my heart believe that promoters need to be held accountable for the well-being of the one who is stepping in their building, in their ring, and putting on the show for them.
Now, you have had a very long career, and you wrestled for many times, very long matches. Did you have a specific diet and training regimen that you used over the years to maintain ring shape so you could last in the ring for so long?
Yeah, I never would drink anything before I went out except for water, and eat bananas prior to get the potassium so I wouldn't cramp and give me the energy that I needed. But yes, along the road, definitely, we would try to eat right and stay in shape, because keep in mind, it's like people want to see you, not for 5 minutes, not for 10 minutes, but if you were top billed or even mid-card, you needed to be the person in which they wanted to see. And eating right, eating the protein, getting the good carbs, eating the good fats before you went out, give you that energy. Eating pasta the night before eating pasta the night before, so you had those carbs, you had that energy to burn. So there's a lot more to it. Good question.
Another thing that helps prolong a wrestler's career is working in good rings. I know on the independent level, the conditions of the rings vary very, very dramatically. In your opinion, who had the best ring that you ever got to perform in?
Ted Allen built the best ring in the business. It was the best bumping ring there ever was. Period. You could work 7 nights a week without a problem in one of Ted Allen's rings.
Now, for the listeners today that might be thinking of future careers in professional wrestling, do you have any people in mind that you would most recommend to go to for training? Are there people that if someone asked you where they should go, you would put these guys at the top of the list for training schools?
Not any in Georgia that I would, you know, that I would personally recommend. Probably midsummer, I plan on opening my wrestling school back again to bring in the guys. But if I was going to throw one out there, it would probably be Old Pro Championship Wrestling, which is Robert Gibson in the Rock and Roll Express. He would definitely teach you the way the business should be today. Until then, I get mine opened back up because, Bill Eady is the one who gave me my complete format, which is Superstar and Action Demolition. Is when he gave me my format to lay out my wrestling school, and which, I trained at Buff Bible, Blades, the Convicts, Glenn Gibbernetti, Disco Inferno, and my brother, Terry Lawler. I trained some guys who definitely respected the business, and that's part of the problem today is the wrestling schools do not know how. It's kind of like, you've got the blind leading the blind. The one who's usually doing the training has been properly trained himself. So I would not endorse any school other than Robert Gibson School.
At this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by, and I know that he also has a few questions for you, so I'm going to give things over to QT.
Okay, brother.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Steve.
Hey, brother, how you doing?
Pretty good. Not bad. Steve, I saw your YouTube video entitled Steve Lawler versus Eddie Sweat. Do you remember that match? It was a fairly long time ago.
I do.
Oh, okay. Well, the announcer said after he introduced Eddie and his opponent, anywhere where he wants to be, from 265 pounds, Steve the Brawler Lawler. Well, Steve, in this era of GPS, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and high security cameras, have you narrowed down the ambiguity, and do you now have a clear and concise residence?
I do, my brother. It's Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, okay. I'm just asking because the announcer said anywhere where he wants you to be. Yes.
Yeah. Anybody?
All right.
He actually messed up on that one. It's supposed to be where I wanted to be from. And we laughed about that. Rhubarb Jones.
Rhubarb Jones?
Rhubarb Jones, yes, sir.
Rhubarb,
I've been here for 25 years.
Oh, well, we've had him on the show, yes. I should have recognized him. I guess I haven't had my espresso yet.
That's okay. You better
Rhubarb Jones was a very good interview for us. Yes,
yeah,
Rhubarb was a gentleman.
He's a true Southern gentleman.
Now, did you grow up pretty much your childhood in the Atlanta area?
We did. My brother both and I did. Yes, sir. We did. We're very blessed.
All right. Well, Steve, in that match with Eddie, I was struck by the fact that both yourself and him had on white wrestling boots, black knee pads, and you had on a black singlet, while the referee had on white tennis shoes and a black pair of pants. This may have been the most color-coordinated match you had ever been in, both wrestlers and the ref wearing 90% of the same color scheme. I was blown away.
Looked pretty good, didn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And, on the marquee, QT, it does say professional. And that was still the era in which our tights were not torn. Our dress attire was our office attire. And we if I wore everything like everybody else, then why should I be able to call myself a professional? And you carried your stuff in a Halliburton bag, and your stuff was to be as neat as presentable as it could be, because you're paying a ticket to come see me, and if I'm out there with overalls and no shoes or holes in my shoes or my shirt's torn, then what's the difference in you going home and putting on the same thing I have? And
yes, the only wrestler that could really get away with maybe some overalls and no shoes, maybe Haystack Calhoun and Hillbilly Jim.
And that was the era. And that was,
yes,
that was how things were presented. But everybody else had to be top-notch chef.
Now, for our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners that don't know, what is a Halliburton bag? You said you carried your gear in that?
Yes, you can go look at it. Halliburton bag was real big in the 80s and the early 90s. The cheapest bag was like $600. And it was a briefcase or a suitcase, and that was what everybody, it was lockable, it was presentable. And you were there when someone came to a territory, told them the Halliburton bag, they were there for business. There was
bags. All right.
They were very professional. They were virtually indestructible when you flew a lot, like I did, and like a lot of the guys did. Then you knew that your bag, it may have gotten beaten up, but that bag was going to be there. It was your office.
Wow! All right.
It goes back to the marquee of being professional.
All right. Yeah, kind of like a dress for success type thing. Yes.
There you go. Yes, sir.
All right. Well, now the other wrestlers, they might be on the lookout how your gear was, and if you did carry them in a nice bag. Was it important as putting your gear in a bag and having clean gear, not torn? Was that important as having a cauliflower ear?
Pretty much. A lot of guys, their scars on their forehead would be their resume, and the cauliflower ear would be their resume. And it was the era in which you come from. I was kind of like benefited from not having too bad of a cauliflower ear. But yet my resume was the scars and the battle wounds. And they're still visible today.
Wow, all right, okay. I know that is the case of Dutch Savage, who used to wrestle in Portland, Oregon back in the 70s. Very scarred forehead, yes. Because he grew up in the Pacific Northwest and grew up watching Portland wrestling.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that was your resume back in the day.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Steve, I also saw your match with the wrestler Maul, and he bore a similar appearance to Big Van Vader. He had a notable size difference than that of Eddie Sweat. What was your game plan versus Maul, and how did it differ than that of Eddie? At that time, had you studied VHF tapes of Maul?
No. Maul was, if I remember correctly, that's the one I opened up with about 8 chair shots in a row.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my game plan.
Well, in fact, I looked at the time of those chair shots, and you had entered, shortly after you entered, you hit him with 4 chair shots, and it started at the 7-minute and 7-second mark, and then the second one, 1 second later, and then two more in rapid succession. Well, you first started trading blows when you came out of the dressing room at the 6:56 mark, and so it took only 11 seconds for that first share shot to hit. And I'd like to tell you, the women's world record for the 100 meters is 10-7 by Florence Griffin Joyner. So your share shots in this match would have started shortly after she had crossed the finish line. Yes, in less than time for a 100-meter run.
Well, that was my game plan. I stuck to it. I kind of knew that he's bigger, younger, and I figured, you know what, let's just go ahead and get down to business.
I'm not a patient man.
Yes, now at that time, I suspect that match may have taken – well, I don't know. It's hard to tell. When did your match with them all take place?
Monroe, Georgia, for Southern Fried Championship Wrestling.
Oh, okay. Do you know what year that was?
That I can't remember. I don't have a short-term memory.
Oh, all right. I was going to say it was in the era of VHF tapes, because back then you didn't have YouTube. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I noticed that your entrance was Bad Company. Did you have a chance to see them in concert back in the day?
We did, and actually sat down and talked to them about us using that song for our entrance, and we actually got their blessings to use it.
Oh, wow. Wow. Who did you talk to, their bass player or lead singer?
Lead singer.
Oh, all right. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil fans that aren't familiar with Bad Company who their lead singer was?
I've got it written. And like I said, I don't have them. These are the concussions. Some of my memory comes and goes. Our agent, Sam Kent, actually set a meeting up with us. We actually went up to New York and sat down with them.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Man, okay. Well, Steve, Maul targeted your lower neck and upper shoulder area with three right forearm elbow smashes around the 10.5-minute mark of the match. And I could not help but compare this to a Spanish bullfight where the non-matadors stick their lances into a bull's neck and shoulder area to weaken the bull's neck muscles. So he or she has to keep the neck lower during the match or bullfight. Have you had any neck or upper shoulder problems as a result of all your matches? I know that you said that you had leg and ankle problems.
Yeah, I do have neck problems and both shoulder problems. Dislocated one shoulder during the match with the Rock and Roll Express, put it back in and finished the match. And tore the rotator cuff during that match, but was able to put it back in because it dislocated the shoulder. Put the shoulder back in with a hip toss. And
torn rotator cuff back in place with a hip toss?
Well, we actually said, we separated. My shoulder separated. And and I knew that I had to do something. And by taking a hip toss and the way the hip toss was delivered, and the way I bumped back down and put it back in. And it also kind of makes the doctors, they took me to the hospital, that it was actually put back in, but it did tear.
Oh, okay. All right. Did they give you cortisone shots then?
No, I can't take cortisone.
Oh, all
cortisone,
right.
Cortisone shots is what killed my friend Ray Candy, the Candy Man, back in the early 90s.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, now, speaking of bullfights, in your opinion, could Maul have wowed the Spanish ladies as a bullfighter?
I think Maul could have wowed the big women wearing muumuus at Walmart, but yeah, that's just my opinion.
All right, I'm going to write down "Wild the Women at Walmart." Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gentlemen, I hate to cut this interview short, but I have some
something has come up. As much as I would like to keep the interview going, but there's something that has come across my desk here.
All right. Okay, sign day, could we have Steve the Brawler Lawler back on again at a different
yes,
time?
Sir. It would be my pleasure. Yeah, I'm very proud of y'all. Very, very humbled to be on y'all's interview and your radio. Y'all are doing a good job. Keep it up. And send me your address, and maybe I can send y'all some autographed stuff, autographed pictures or something. But any time that I can be on with hand or assistance, y'all give me a call. Anything I do to help you.
All right, we appreciate
y'all.
It very much.
And y'all are doing a great job.
Thank you, and thank you very much for taking some time to be with us today. We much appreciate
it. Yes. But anything y'all need, you just let me know, okay?
Will do.
Okay, brothers, y'all keep it up.
All right, thank you very much. Well, fans, Steve the Brawler Lawler, great veteran talent. If you get the chance to see him on a show near you, definitely take advantage of it. Great veteran of the sport. Very, very prominent in the South. QT, man's been in there with some great, great talents, trained a lot of great talent.
I got to tell you that, yes, I was going to ask him if he had been in the ring with the adorable Adrian Adonis.
I cannot confirm or deny, but it's possible that he was before the tragic passing of Adrian.
Well, maybe, around that time, mid-80s, when he first started training, if we have Steve the Brawler Lawler back on, that's one of the questions I'm going to ask him. You know, but I know that you probably saw his match with Maul, who resembles Big Van Vader, and they did seem to target that upper neck area, both with the clubbing forearms. I don't know. It just struck me like as a bullfight, yes, where they weaken the shoulder and neck area with those lances. Yes.
Now, have you ever done any type of bullfighting, QT? Have you gotten in there with, like, a mechanical bull?
I myself have never rode a mechanical bull. However, like Steve, I had a brother that I used to backyard wrestle with. We were similar height and weight. I know that we used foreign objects on each other. At that time, it was Hot Wheel tracks was very popular, the plastic Hot Wheel tracks. If you, you know, they can't do too much damage. But I was going to ask Steve if he had ever kind of, like he said, he imitated the wrestlers that he saw. My brother Chris and I would imitate, you know, Dutch Savage or Playboy Buddy Rose or Rip Oliver and the Clan. And most of our wrestling matches, of course, would take place after we were supposed to be in bed. And our mom usually had the job of thumping on the ceiling, you know, and that let us know, hey, we better quiet down because she's got to go to work at the hospital in the morning. And every now and then we get so involved, you know, we ignore those thumps, and she'd have to come down and stand in the doorway. Ooh, that was big problems then. Yes. Or she'd threaten to send down Dad. Yes.
Now, did she ever throw salt in your face to break up the match, like a Mr. Fuji?
No, by that time we could hear her pretty much coming down the stairs because we kind of had creaky stairs. So sometimes we'd have to break our toehold or something regretfully and try to get back in bed by the time she got to the door. Now, that was kind of fun itself. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, we were pretty far away from the beds and you had to scamper. It depended on her descent on the stairs. Yes.
Did you ever do a double handspring into the bed, like the great Muta?
I never mastered the double handspring, no. No.
I think you should work on it. It'd be a great way to get into bed for you now.
Wow, yeah. Well, now I get out of bed pretty good. Yes, I get out of bed doing cartwheels and 360 rolls. Yes. if you can believe that. Yes.
I don't see why not.
Oh, okay. Well, now, Sang, I was going to ask Steve, the Lola Brawler, if in his opinion, well, let me see now. Oh, yeah, if Mal Boris' striking resemblance to the convict Grossberger in the movie Stir Crazy.
I don't know, but Mal actually reminded me of the awesome Kongs that were in WCW in the early 90s.
All right, Awesome Kong. Okay, very good. As you know, Mal had that mask on, so it would be kind of hard to compare him to Grossberger. But as you remember, Grossberger was in that movie, rodeo for the convicts, and he stopped that bull from charging. So that kind of reminded me of the Mal versus Steve Lawler match, where Grossberger went to the bull and stopped him in his tracks.
Well, yeah, I can see that then.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully if we have Steve Lawler back on, I can ask him that question about Grossberger. Yes.
Have you ever fought someone that large wearing a mask before?
Oh, no. Well, now, as you know, Sangai, the closest that I've come to, well, I think it's a pretty good comparison, is when I got into the ring in Indiana and the lights darkened, remember, in my Quattro Thumbtack match, and someone hit me with 3 knife-edge chops. Now, for legal reasons, I can't disclose who that was, but he was like in an executioner's mask.
Wasn't that Michael Myers?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I can't myself. I've been warned that I can't say the Michael Myers because of legal reasons. Yes. Jerry Wilson has warned me never to say Jerry Lawler in wrestling in the same sentence. Yes.
Oh, all right.
I didn't know if you knew about this discourse between Jerry Wilson and myself and the legal precedents of who chopped me in the chest.
Does he have Clarence Mason on retainer? Is that what you're saying?
A retainer, yes. A legal retainer. Jerry Wilson has retained one, yes.
All right. We could ask Clarence Mason when he's scheduled to be on Turnbuckle on May Day, if that is still the case.
Oh, okay. Well, Sign, you know, at one point, Steve the Brawler Lawler, he went after that mask, and I can tell you, I actually was at the 14-minute mark. He looked at the audience for their approval to take off the mask. And as you know, if you take off a wrestler's mask, that wrestler he's emasculated pretty much. So it's a pretty big deal. And it was such a big deal that Mahler's manager risked himself to get into the ring to stop this. Now, of course, Steve took exception for the manager being in the ring, gave him a forearm club himself, and sent him out of the ring. But I couldn't be helped but be reminded of the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, when sometimes he would stick his nose in, maybe not to save a loose wrestler's lucha mask, but sometimes he got thrown out of the ring. Yes.
He did have a mask charge or two in his day. I remember he had the Grappler in his stable of wrestlers at one point in Memphis.
Oh, okay, Memphis. Okay, the Grappler. Yes, okay. Did you ever try to run into the ring to save the Grappler from being unmasked? That's what I'm asking.
I'm sure at some point in time that he definitely did.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I think I have myself a homework assignment to see if Jimmy Hart ever tried to save any masked wrestler. Yes. Actually, I got another assignment to see how many.
Over the years, he probably had several other masked wrestlers in his family of wrestlers. He was around for a very, very long time, of course.
Oh, okay, well, I'm going to do some research into that. You know, hopefully report back to Devin Bellinger how many masked wrestlers Jimmy Hart actually managed. That'd be great. Yes.
Now, can you confirm or deny if South Park Bellinger himself has ever worn a mask during a match?
I have never seen any Lucha masks in his store for sale. I don't know. Maybe South Park Bellinger would like to be my manager in my final professional wrestling match, hopefully to be held here in the Northwest.
Isn't that potentially against Paul Moonshine?
Yes, Paul Moonshine, yes. Who I've come to have a grudging admiration for. That's what the words I was looking for. Grudging admiration. I might say so on the sign at tonight's event. Yes.
Oh, so you will be at the North Portland Eagles tonight, huh?
That's 95% confirmed. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Let me go ahead and I will now, for the first time ever, log into my work site and confirm if I'm going based on my work schedule. This is going to be great. Okay, just 1 second.
Groundbreaking.
Now, Sangay, did you have any referee duties yesterday in Seattle? That's what our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners want to know.
Yes, I did, actually. I had Project 42 in Seattle, Washington, at El Corazon, as we discussed earlier.
Now, did Kellen Rath give you any messages to give to me? Any messages?
None to give to you, but he was emphatic that he thought I screwed up a count. Very emphatic.
Oh boy. Who was he in action with when you made this count?
That would be Kate Carney.
Kate Carney, okay. I see. Did this eventually maybe cost him the match?
No, because he did win the match later on, but just not at that moment.
Oh, all right. So he may have been very pissed off at the delay. Okay. Oh, all right. Well, Sangay, yes, it does look like I will be going to the North Portland Eagles. Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, QT, I have to confirm this, but I believe that at one point Jimmy Hart was managing Hoss Funk and Jimmy Jack Funk as a tag team very briefly. If that is the case, Jimmy Jack Funk did in fact wear a Lone Ranger style mask, so I think he would have to count.
Oh, Jimmy Jack Funk. Okay, let me write that down. This is very important. Jimmy Jack Funk, okay. Ooh, Jimmy Jack Funk. Lone Ranger mask, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Lone Ranger mask, Jimmy Hart. Okay, very interesting. I should contact Aaron Bolo about this. Yes.
Is that because he was a big Jimmy Jack Funk fan?
Well, I think he was, yes. Well, okay, Lone Ranger Mac, Jimmy Hart, very interesting. I will certainly pass that on to the Weather Club. That's huge news. Yes. Oh, okay. Now, I was going to ask Steve the Brawler Lawler if he had ever been tag team partners with any ladies back in the 80s. You know, as you know, there weren't that many women wrestlers breaking in at the time. Well, they were on Glow Wrestling, I guess. Glow. That you know, they had the Farmer's Daughter and that kind of faction at that time. Yes. But as for Steve the Brawler Lawler, I don't know if he's ever tag team with them. When we have him back on, that's a very legitimate question. And if he did, if he ever had a female tag team partner turn against him.
Possibly. That is something we will have to ask him when he comes back to the show.
How many tag team partners, female, has Dash Venture had?
Several. I know he is teamed with Lila Lodge. I know he is tag team with Casey Carlisle, whom I love. He is tag-teamed with, I believe, MJ Payne as a partner.
Yes, Dash Venture and Casey Carlisle, they went up against Stomp and Steve.
Yes, Stompin' South Park, Bellinger Bragg, Williams Mitchell, and his partner, Lila Lodge.
Now, how did Casey Carlisle fare in that match against Lila Lodge? Two sort of contrasting styles right there. Yes.
But she handled herself very well. They did not win the match. Dash Venture was pinned in that match, but very, very competitive.
To this day, does Lila Lodge talk fondly of Casey Carlisle?
I cannot confirm that.
I see. Now, how is Casey? Can you give our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners an update on how Casey Carlisle's injury is coming? As you know, she had an injury to her knee.
She's taking a couple of weeks off. She did wrestle last week, going to take the next couple of weeks off, and then she will be back. Apparently, the knee is healing.
I see. So it wasn't a torn anterior cruciate ligament.
No, I do not believe it was a torn ACL.
All right, and speaking of knee injuries, can you give us an update on the contest of Dave the Beast Barnett and his lump on his leg? I myself said it was one of the world's 10 worst mosquito bites. Was I even close?
Well, I cannot divulge that at this point, but the contest is, there's a picture on the Book of Faces of Beast Barnett's injured shin. The contest is, submit your guess to what the actual diagnosis of it was. The contest goes until midnight Pacific time on April 24th.
Has a winning prize been determined? What's first? Is there a first, second, and third place prizes? That's what I'm getting at.
There is not. We will take any correct submissions, and if there is a tie with multiple correct submissions, we will put those names in a hat, draw one out. That will be the winner. Winner receives an undisclosed hospital gift shop prize.
Now, has Larry Golden Songbird Amos submitted a suggestion or a guess?
Not as of yet.
Well, she has to get going on this.
She has until midnight on the 24th.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yeah, I will send her a memo and make sure she gets a copy of that memo, just like on Office Space.
All right.
In fact, I look forward to reenacting that kind of scene with Office Space with Laren Golden Songbird Amos. You know, I could kind of, as she is seated at the North Portland Eagles tonight, I could wander around, hey, Golden Songbird, what's happening? Yeah, did you get that memo about Dave the Beast Barnett's shin? And I see, and I hope to her credit, she'll look up at me with kind of disinterest and kind of a dismayed look on her face and said, yes, I read the memo and I understand what it means and there will be no problem. And then I'll come back and say, yeah, I'm going to just put a cover sheet on that memo about Dave the Beast Barnett's shin. I think it'll be great. Yes.
Will this be during Dave Hollenbeck's match?
Well, probably not. I could see Laren Golden Songbird Amos getting very mad if I interrupted her. After all, I think Hollenbeck is probably one of her top five wrestlers to watch. Yes.
You could also ask her that in the memo.
I think if I interrupted her, she would probably club me like Steve the Brawler Lawler did with you know, his wrestler.
Would that be Maul?
Maul, yes. She would club me like Steve the Brawler or did Maul, right in the upper shoulder area. Yes, it would be devastating.
And you do have a history of shoulder injuries.
That's true, due to my shot put. The question is, sign guy, should I bring my 10-pound shot put to show Pa Moonshine? And has Pa Moonshine ever felt a 10-pound shot put?
I would say yes and no.
I would say no, because in Appalachia, you know, they're pretty poor. I once did a monologue about that.
That is true, you did.
And Buddy Highway was quite, how would you say, not taken aback, but he did hold my shot put, and Buddy Highway helped me measure the tables at Blue Collar Wrestling, which I finally remember.
Well, you have
the
Highway autograph said shot put tonight.
No, my shot puts are all painted in spray paint to prevent rust. You know, they've got that psychedelic black and yellow on them. You know, I don't know. No one else brings shot puts to a wrestling event. I don't know why, but I would like to show a shot put to Pa Moonshine. And maybe the old couple that sit by me. Well, maybe they've seen one. Okay. Well, okay. Track equipment.
No,
all I'm saying is track equipment.
And a javelin to NWA Blue Collar.
Oh, Sonia, you wouldn't believe how much those javelins cost. $500-$600. No way I'm going to spend that much money on a javelin.
Not even to bring it to show JB Moonshine?
No, the closest thing I could come would be a sharpened Kindle stick, which I have proposed many times on Turnbuckle Turmoil. Kindle stick.
True you have. Now, what about a discus? Could you bring maybe a discus for Buddy Highway to autograph?
Oh, well, he's already autographed my Devo album. What do you think? Should I concentrate more on my Devo album autographs and not bring the discus, or bring a discus and not the
Devo
album? I
would say bring a discus, because most of the roster, NWA Blue Collar, have signed that Devo album already.
Okay. All right, I guess I could bring a discus, yes, and a felt pen.
Now, do you have a Sharpie available for these people to use to sign?
I do have a Sharpie, because I have to make up a sign. Yes, I bought a yellow plaster board. Hopefully this will be a message to Pa Moonshine. Or Gregor Petrov, yes.
Or
as you
know,
some guy,
one for someone that does not get very many signs, such as possibly DeMarcus James.
Oh, okay. Well, DeMarcus James, yeah, he hasn't had much of a sign. Sign history. DeMarcus James, yes. I wonder what I could say to DeMarcus James. Oh, yeah, on a sign, yes. Boy, that'll take some thinking. DeMarcus,
or perhaps even maybe an Aries Toretta. He doesn't get much in the way of signs.
Yeah, that's true. What would you call a DeMarcus James groupie?
A James Maddock.
James Maddock. Okay, James Maddock. Well, okay. How would you spell Maddock? M-A-T-T-I-C-K?
I'd spell it J-A-M-E-S-N-A-T-I-C.
Well, Maddock.
Yes, like a fanatic.
Oh, okay. Well, Sunday, in our last 2 minutes, can you tell who we will have on next Friday?
Yes. Friday we have, let's see, Chris Caliber. Chris Caliber making his way back for the first time in a long, long time. And I can also tell you that next Sunday, confirmed, is Annie Wraith.
Oh, wow. Okay. Annie Wraith. Wow, that's okay.
Well, with that,
we
need to get to the North Portland Eagles. So if you're in the Portland area, check us out. If you're over near Astoria, PNPW tonight, lots of great wrestling going on. Find yourself a show, support it, and we will be back with you next week.
Okay.